Such an honor to have my next guest on the show, acclaimed author Stephanie Dickinson, stop by. And she's got a new book out, Razor Wire Wilderness, where violence, victimhood, and redemption converge, and stunningly personal new true crime memoir. You do not want to miss this episode with author Stephanie Dickinson, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning in to the top-ranked CJ Evolution podcast. Top-ranked because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for the support. If you are a new listener, welcome to the show. We know you're going to love it. Long-time listener, welcome back. And if you haven't given this show a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, please take a moment and do that. We sure would appreciate it. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for doing it. And among all the noise out there, among all the negativity on this noble profession, remember this: you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. The vast majority of Americans in this country support and love you. Keep up the fantastic work.
You hear the headlines. You know health insurance is a real mess right now. Premiums have skyrocketed, and in most cases, you're stuck with your plan until open enrollment. But there's a government rule that allows you to qualify for lower health insurance rates if your life has changed. That means if you've changed jobs, if you're having a child, if you're getting married, if you're getting divorced, even if you run a small business or you're self-employed, this law may qualify you to get lower health insurance rates. Call the health insurance hotline today. Learn how this 10-minute call can help you get lower health insurance rates. This is a free service to help consumers learn the laws to help them qualify for lower health insurance rates. So call right now to learn more.
800-608-2521. 800-608-2521. 800-608-2521. That's 800-608-2521. Paid for by GoHealth.
If you are in charge of your organization's extra duty program, I know how it is with all the other things you got going on your plate, all the other projects, assignments. I get it. That's where Extra Duty Solutions can come and help you. They help law enforcement agencies everywhere add efficiency and effectiveness to their extra duty programs while allowing them to focus on what really matters, and that's the safety of their citizens. They work with law enforcement agencies everywhere to help administer their extra duty program. They can help with client interaction, scheduling, officer payments, feedback, and so much more. Their services are provided at no cost to the department and a minimum cost to the clients, and programs can be customized to meet the goals and unique needs of any agency. Folks, you need Extra Duty Solutions to help you with your extra duty program. Go to extradutysolutions.com. That's extradutysolutions.com, and tell them Patrick from the CJ Evolution Show sent you. On to acclaimed author Stephanie Dickinson. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am very excited to have my next guest on the show. She's an author, very successful author, and her name is Stephanie Dickinson. She's going to talk about her book, Razor Wire Wilderness. Welcome, Stephanie. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for asking me, Patrick.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know. Sorry, I butchered that title, that book, Razor Wire Wilderness. And I'm anxious to get into this particular book because it's a murder case. It's a true case, right? And you're going to tell us about Jennifer Moore, who is a victim of murder that you write about, right?
Right. This happened in late July of 2006. It happened. It was called one of the Clubland murders in New York City. Jennifer Moore, an 18-year-old young woman from a New Jersey suburb, was clubbing with a friend. They were underage drinking, and when they left the club about 2 a.m., their car had been towed. They walked to the New York City tow pound, and the tow pound attendants wouldn't release the vehicle because the girls were visibly drunk. And Jennifer's friend passed out and was taken away in an ambulance, and Jennifer walked off into the night. She only had her cell phone with her. She wasn't even carrying her purse. It was locked in the trunk of the vehicle. And as she was walking along West Side Highway in her club clothes of white mini and a black halter top. Draymond Coleman, an ex-con and small-time pimp, began to follow her. Mm-hmm. And at some point, he talked her into getting into a cab with him. He took her to a Weehawken, New Jersey, shabby rent by the week hotel. He shared with his girlfriend, prostitute, Crystal Reardon. And at dawn, they entered the room, and Draymond Coleman raped, bludgeoned, and strangled Jennifer in front of Crystal, his girlfriend. And he killed her. And Crystal helped him the next day clean the body. And they carried Jennifer out of the hotel in a large suitcase. And her body was left in a dumpster. And that is, it was a brutal, grisly, horrific crime. And the whole city, was stunned. And there were other Cloveland murders that summer, but this was the one that just was a shocker. And yet today, most people, if you'd say Jennifer Moore murdered, they can't recall it. So.
Well, I was one of those people. I mean, I was like, until I started researching it, because I was like, you know, when we were talking before you came on, we were in the email stage of things. I had to look it up because it was one of those, I mean, it was a horrible case, but yeah, I had to look it up because it was in the news and then it seemed like it was gone.
It absolutely, for whatever reason, there was another murder that came and I guess it was solved, quote unquote, and it just didn't, it died.
So. Didn't have that mystery or that, you know, that crime, you know, kind of mystery that a lot of cases have where there's a, you know, unknown perp, but we actually had a suspect, Draymond Coleman, and actually two now, Crystal Reardon. What drew you to this particular crime, Stephanie, especially what drew you to Crystal?
I had, this crime just, you know, absolutely riveted me because, you probably know by bio that when I was 18 years old, I was shot. Mm-hmm. And I had made one of those forever mistakes. And here we had Jennifer Moore getting into the cab with Draymond Coleman. And it was one of those forever mistakes. And Crystal Reardon was with Draymond. And she committed a sin in the beginning of omission of not stopping mm-hmm. what he was doing. And she made that mistake too, that. And they were of that age, 18, and Crystal was 20. And I couldn't imagine what went on in that room that Crystal didn't intervene. And because of that triangle of whatever synergy was between Draymond, Jennifer, and Crystal, I became quite, quite interested in it. And I wrote some stories in fiction about this. And then someone suggested, why don't you contact Crystal, who was serving time in prison? And that's when the relationship began.
Yeah. Well, I imagine a lot of it, you tell me if I'm wrong, Stephanie, is that control that Draymond had over Crystal. And one thing that fascinated me about this case is Crystal came from a, she was adopted, right? But she was—
Correct.
She was adopted into a very wealthy family. Not that money solves everything, folks. I think we know that. But it does help, right? With advantages and things like that. She didn't take advantage of that.
Well, that came up in the trial the penalty phase of it. And Crystal said to me, she and her sister Nicole were both adopted by the Reardons, that they were already broken when they had gone through a few years of foster care too. And they had also been both molested by an uncle during their time with their birth family. So they carry those things with them. Mm-hmm. And Crystal seemed to do, people really liked Crystal in that community, a very wealthy community in Connecticut. And they wanted their daughters to be like her. And when she became more of an adolescent and her adoptive mother was quite strict, these behaviors started to come out.
Due to probably because of the abuse, right, Stephanie? That was part of it.
Abuse and it was part of it. She just, and at that point, she was, according to her parents, she was embarrassing them in front of the community. The Reardons were accountants. They had their own accounting firm. And they loved her. They wanted the best for her. And they went to a psychologist who suggested sending them to Elon School in Maine. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's since been closed for their abusive attack therapy. But wow. Crystal was sent there for four years. And she has said to me so many times, I would have rather be in prison than at Elon. So I wow. did a pretty deep research into Elon, and I credit that school for a lot of Crystal's actions in their room that night and that morning. Because you become such a passive observer of verbal attack therapy, you're used to just being frozen. So that in collaboration with Draymond's control and his abusiveness, I think just made her commit that sin of omission.
Wow. And how, I'm not going to make any excuses for her, but how does verbal attack therapy help somebody? I mean, maybe there's probably a good reason this place is closed.
Well, it went on for decades. Yeah. And the price tag was like $56,000 a year.
To pay people to yell at people.
Yeah, and the staff was composed of people who had graduated from the program, and they had general meetings, screamed at. You have people watching you at all time. If you call your parents, you would have a support person on either side of you. If any you tried to say anything negative about Elon, the call was cut.
Wow.
You were watched every 15 minutes when you slept. There would be a flashlight would come in. And this is not just Crystal's story. This is collaborated. Many, many volumes of testimony would shine a light underneath your blankets to see if you were asleep. So all night long, your sleep would be broken by these 15-minute intervals of you being checked to make sure you weren't in flight risk. So, and then the general meeting, you would be screamed at by the whole gathering. And
anybody would get messed up in that environment. I mean, I'm not condoning. I don't think anybody's condoning Crystal's behavior, but I mean, that type of environment doesn't help the situation. And given, you know, in collaboration with her being abused as a small kid.
You know, I think that for some people said it helped them. And I think it probably depends on
the person.
It depends on the person, because if you're vulnerable or as Crystal calls herself, a people pleaser, and she says that she's weak-minded, it was not the right place to be.
No, especially coming from a abusive background, you know, being molested. And I mean, geez, I can't imagine. It worked for me in the military where I was getting yelled at, but it was a different setting.
There you go. That's true. So, you know, maybe for some people that was what they needed.
Now, Crystal and Draymond get sentenced. You know, they get sentenced, so they're in prison, right?
Correct.
Let's talk about, there was a second inmate that you talk about in your book, Lucy Weems. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
Okay. Lucy Weems is an incredible Italian American. She's now 44 years old. She's a little bit older than the other inmates at EMCF. She was, she's the mother of two. She had been married before she was sentenced. And she has her BS in accounting. She's a brilliant, brilliant woman. But she became involved with heroin with her first husband. And she said her life was rehab, relapse.
Mm-hmm.
And she became a prostitute after the first marriage broke up. And to support the heroin habit.
Yeah.
You know, and after she married again, she had her children. And her drug dealer sold her some bad heroin. And she said, quote unquote, it brought the gangster out in me. And she decided that she was going to pay him back she and some friends lured him to a hotel for what they said would be sex acts. And they had him undress and they tied him up in a chair. And then Lucy took out a gun that she borrowed from a friend and they robbed him. And she told Ramon, tell the maid when they find you that it's a sex act gone bad. And I believe she probably thought that there wasn't going to be any police called or, and they left, but it did take almost a year for them to arrest her.
So they killed this guy.
No, they didn't kill this guy.
Oh, they still had him tied up and okay.
They left him in an embarrassing position.
Oh,
they
okay.
They left him naked, tied up.
So when the police finally find him, they say, hey, who did this? And then it leads to her.
That's correct. But I don't think that they pursued it with a lot of
no
grit, because it took them, she was back working as an accountant when she was stopped for a traffic violation. Wow. And they found the warrant on this. So at that point, then she was arrested and she was charged with kidnapping and assault. And she was afraid that she was going to get 30 years, but her father was able to hire a lawyer and they did get that reduced to 9 years.
Yeah. And the biggest one is probably the kidnapping is a felony. And then what other charges that you said? Yeah, the kidnapping is the biggest one.
Now, interestingly.
Go ahead.
Interestingly, one of Crystal's charges was kidnapping too.
Oh, it was. Well, because, you know, now you probably know this, Stephanie, but kidnapping is, it's every state is different. But, you know, here in Colorado, it's basically, if I just move somebody against their will from one room to the other part of the room, that could be characterized as kidnapping. So I don't know what the law is in New York or New Jersey, but I imagine it's fairly similar.
I didn't realize that it was quite that strict, but I mean,
I mean, there's more with it, but generally, you know, if I take somebody against their will, you remember O.J. Simpson? Here's an example. You remember O.J. Simpson? You know who that is, Stephanie. Remember?
Oh, yes.
So O.J., remember he went to Vegas and got arrested again because he was going to get his memorabilia that somebody was selling. So he was in this hotel room really quick, and he basically, him and his people we were with who were armed, basically had these people kind of move from one side of the hotel room to another so they could take, they tacked on a kidnapping charge on him.
Wow.
So it really depends on where you're at, but you know, kidnapping isn't necessarily taking somebody against their will and taking them any particular distance. It can be very, very subtle, like just moving somebody to, you know, a very short distance against their will. So anyway, I digress. I apologize.
No, I think that's very interesting to know because someone might think, well, you tied him in a chair. He knew he was coming into that room. Why is that kidnapped? But it is. It's you've explained it really well.
Yeah. Yeah. So now you obviously did a lot of research in this book, and everything for everybody listening is you can find this book as well as other books Stephanie has written at stephaniedickinson.net, and all that'll be linked up in the show notes. Now, as you were researching this and as you were writing about this case, Stephanie, how did this, what impact did this have on you when it comes to the criminal justice system?
Well, this, I really didn't start out looking at this project as research. Mm-hmm. I was extending a hand in friendship to someone. I wanted to understand what happened in that room. And as our relationship has gone on for about 7 years, I started sending books. I started sending art supplies. I started helping with JPEG. And I started to see how difficult it was, how arbitrary the rules often were, and how expensive it was for the poor to support their inmate who was incarcerated. And it was very, very not only disrespectful of the inmate, who is disrespected a lot, but of the family or the friend of the person trying to help. And so that led me into wanting to find out more about how the whole system operated.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned JPEG, and I know what that is. But if for the listener out there, Stephanie, can you explain what is JPAY and how does it operate? And that's a system that works a lot in corrections, and there's a lot of different things. I mean, that could be anything from writing letters and notes to inmates, correct?
Correct. My relationship with Crystal started out with letters. I have shopping bags full of letters. Then JPAY was installed, or JailPAY, and it's an electronic digital website that you log into, you set up your account, and you're able to transfer funds from your bank account into an account that's set up for each inmate. And you have to find your inmates by state and by inmate number. And then it will come up and you're able to transfer funds. You can compose emails. You can have a video chat visit. That's new, but that you can. So it has this whole array of services that make it easier in some respects for the inmate and the inmate's family to support their loved one. And it is operated by a for-profit privatized company, I believe, in Tennessee. And it does charge.
I was going to say
pretty high transfer fees.
So there's a monetization behind it.
The whole prison system has become, I think, as you well know, the privatization has turned the monetization of the inmates into an incredibly lucrative proposition. For instance, you know, I don't have a lot of money, but when I would transfer $20 via JPAY, I'd be paying a transfer fee of $3.60.
Wow.
So yeah, so it was incredible. And the smaller amounts that you send, that the fee is like, it starts at the bottom dollar. And if you went, it's graduated, but at a certain point when you send a lot more, it's not as bad. But for most people, or for a lot of people, like myself, sending small amounts, and so that fee is just incredible, and that sort of got my dander up.
It'd get anybody's dander up, especially when you were talking about, you know, people who are, you know, economically challenged, who have loved ones that are incarcerated. And, you know, $20 is a lot of money to some people. I mean, it's a lot of money. And when they have to pay a ridiculous percentage on top of that for a transfer fee, it's like adding insult to injury.
And now it's maddening, actually. Yeah. But when you compose an email, and if your email goes on to two pages, you must purchase stamps, what they're called, stamps. They're electronic stamps, and each email costs one stamp.
Mm-hmm.
But if your letter goes on to two, or your email goes on to two, what they consider two electronic pages, that will be two stamps. So even when in the context of an email, if your email was like three pages long, you'd be three stamps.
Wow.
So even within the context of a simple email, the monetization is
wow. That's just crazy.
It's flagrant. It's really flagrant. So.
Now, Stephanie, what did you learn about, you know, the incarceration of women in particular? We talked about privatizing, and it's already here. A lot of prisons are private. What did you learn about the incarceration of women?
Well, for me, I think what struck me most, and this is true for men too, but was the medical negligence, was the gynecological negligence, not taking into consideration that a good portion of these women are mothers, and they're mothers of children under the age of 18. And certain things must be made easier. Before COVID, and you can visit in person, these in-person visits for mothers to see their children is an incredible event. And Clinton, New Jersey, where the prison is located, EMCF, has no buses. They have no bus line. No trains lead to Clinton. The only way you can get to Clinton is via a private vehicle. And I thought that that was particularly onerous to incarcerated women who have children and young children who need to see them.
Making it more difficult, obviously, for to get to them.
And the one train that goes near and Dale doesn't run on the weekends. So, and the visiting hours were very, very small amounts of the day, or Wednesday for 2 hours and then on Saturday. And so it was very, you could see that it was very, it was made to discourage visitors.
Have you ever asked, I mean, at some point, you know, when you were writing about, you know, this story, I mean, did you ever ask anybody why EMCF was, you know, located where it was, and there was only, you know, the impact on its visitation with, you know, you got to take a private vehicle? I mean, just out of curiosity, I don't know if you did.
The prison opened in 1913.
Oh, so it's a very...
Yes, it's a legacy prison. It was called Clinton Farms, and it was, the warden of that was Edna Mann, and she was a women's warden, quite well known. She was really responsible for the rehabilitation of women's prisons in the 20th century. So she had a very, very different idea of what prison should be. It should be real rehabilitative rather than punitive. But that's why the prison is there. It was called Clinton Farm.
Okay.
That's why it was farmland.
And I like what you said about, you know, rehabilitative as far as punitive. I didn't always believe that, but I believe that now, because the reality is, Stephanie, and you know this, the majority of people are going to get out of prison at some point. You know, I think that's a misnomer with a lot of people. Some people think, well, people go to prison, they're locked away forever, they're never going to get out. That's a misnomer. That's not true. The majority of people are going to get out. So we need to do what we can to give them the tools and the resources to be productive members of society when they get released. You know, instead of being more, I mean, I believe in a punitive role too at some point, but bottom line is people are going to get out, the majority of people. So we need to do a better job at preparing them.
You know, at EMCF, they do have an associate degree offered, not in the sciences or math, mathematics, but in the liberal arts. And it's not paid for by the state, but by a private individual grant.
Yeah.
And which is a really wonderful thing. A very wealthy donor has done. And Crystal has availed herself of a number of these classes. And one of them was taught by a Harvard PhD, you know, fellow. So it was a wonderful, wonderful class. And there are some opportunities like that. They don't really seem to, but they are, to get into the class, I guess, is their lists and there's favoritism. And so it's not applied equitably.
Yeah. Well, what do you hope readers take away from this book, Stephanie?
Well, I hope that they might see, like I did, that every person in prison, every inmate is a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And like all of us, we have angels and demons in us, and it's of different portions, but to see people in their humanity and their marvelous and awful humanity. And I, through Crystal and Lucy, I've contacted many inmates and become friendly with them and gotten emails from them. And I can see through their emails so much about a personality.
Yeah.
How they think, and I've just been amazed at the depth of thought in a lot of these individuals, and also the friendships, as well as the horrible fights, but the friendships that are shared between inmates, and that surprised me. And I'm hoping that readers may see that too, that there's a humanity here we share with each other.
So what are you working on now? You got your successful author. You got this great book out there. Again, we're going to link everything up to the show notes for those listeners out there. What's next for Stephanie?
Well, I am writing a nonfiction about age 18, my age 18, when I, the year after I was shot and became disabled. And I never really looked at that aspect of my life, because it is so painful, that transition from wholeness into this other realm, and other strengths come out. There's other beauties to be found, and it takes a while to learn that. And so that's what this this memoir is going to be.
We can't wait for it to come out, Stephanie, and I would love to have you back on the show. You're doing amazing work, my friend. Again, everything is going to be linked up in the show notes. Stephanie, much success to you in the future. You have my contact information. Anything we can do for you, ma'am, just reach out to me.
I really appreciate this. This is very informative and lovely, and you're doing a great service for this country. Thank you.
I appreciate it, Stephanie. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.